You are now listening to the OrthoBullets podcast.
This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of phalanx fractures from the hand section on orthobullets.com. Phalanx fractures are common hand injuries that can be divided into proximal phalanx fractures, middle phalanx fractures, and distal phalanx fractures. Phalanx fractures are the most common injuries to the skeletal system, accounting for 10% of all fractures. They tend to be way more common in males at a 2-to-1 ratio. And as far as location, distal phalanx fractures are the most common, followed by middle phalanx fractures, and then proximal phalanx fractures. The small finger is most commonly affected, accounting for 38% of all hand fractures. The mechanism of injury is usually dependent on age. In the 10-to-29-year-old group, sports is the most common mechanism of injury. In the 40-to-69-year-old group, machinery is the most common, and in the greater than 70-year-old group, falls are the most common mechanism of injury. And as far as associated conditions, nail bed injuries tend to be associated with distal phalanx fractures. On physical exam for these patients, your inspection should look for tenderness, swelling, deformity, crepitus, and make sure to look for any open wounds. You should assess for scissoring of the digits, which of course indicates a rotational component to the injury. Neurovascular exam should assess for numbness that would indicate a digital nerve injury, and you can also assess for a digital artery injury via Doppler. Recommended radiographs for phalanx fractures include a PA, lateral, and oblique plane films. Findings for proximal phalanx fractures may include apex volar angulation due to the proximal fragment being pulled into flexion by the interossei, and the distal fragment being pulled into extension by the central slip. Findings for middle phalanx fractures may include apex volar angulation if the fracture is distal to the FDS insertion, and apex dorsal angulation if proximal to the FDS insertion. Now let's talk about proximal, middle, and distal phalanx fractures in more detail. Proximal phalanx fractures can be classified based on if they are head fractures, neck or shaft fractures, or base fractures. Head fractures can be further classified into three types. Type 1 head fractures are stable with no displacement, type 2 are unstable unicondylar fractures, and type 3 are unstable bicondylar or comminuted fractures. Neck or shaft fractures can be classified as transverse fractures, short oblique fractures, long oblique fractures, and spiral fractures. Again, deformity is usually apex volar angulation with the proximal fragment in flexion due to the interossei and the distal fragment in extension due to the central slip. Base fractures can be classified as extraarticular or intraarticular, which typically involves the lateral base in proximal phalanx fractures. Non-operative management of proximal phalanx fractures includes buddy taping versus splinting, which is indicated for extraarticular fractures with less than 10 degrees of angulation or less than 2 millimeters of shortening and no rotational deformity, as well as non-displaced intraarticular fractures. 3 weeks of immobilization followed by aggressive range of motion is the typical non-operative protocol for these fractures. Operative intervention can involve closed reduction and percutaneous pinning versus open reduction and internal fixation, which are indicated for extraarticular fractures with greater than 10 degrees of angulation or greater than 2 millimeters of shortening or rotational deformity. Other indications for operative intervention include displaced intraarticular fractures and unstable or irreducible fracture patterns. As far as operative techniques, crossed K-wires, Eaton-Belsky pinning through the metacarpal head, or mini-fragment fixation with plate and or lag screws are all options. Lag screws alone can be indicated in the presence of a long oblique fracture. Like proximal phalanx fractures, middle phalanx fractures can also be classified based on if they are head fractures, neck fractures, shaft fractures, or base fractures. So to quickly review, head fractures can be further classified into three types. Type 1 injuries are stable fractures with no displacement, type 2 injuries are unstable unicondylar fractures, and type 3 injuries are unstable bicondylar or comminuted fractures. In middle phalanx neck fractures, the deformity is usually apex volar angulation where the proximal fragment is in flexion due to the FDS, and the distal fragment is in extension due to the terminal tendon. Shaft fractures in the middle phalanx can be transverse, short oblique, long oblique, and spiral. To review, the deformity can be apex volar angulation if distal to the FDS insertion and apex dorsal angulation if proximal to the FDS insertion. And these fractures may also be without angulation due to inherent stability provided by an intact and prolonged FDS insertion. In middle phalanx base fractures, the deformity is usually apex dorsal angulation, where the proximal fragment will be an extension due to the central slip, and the distal fragment will be in flexion due to the FDS. Middle phalanx base fractures can be further classified into partial articular fractures and complete articular fractures. Partial articular fractures can be even further classified into volar base, dorsal base, and lateral base fractures. Volar base fractures result from hyperextension injury or axial loading, and they represent avulsion of the volar plate. These fractures will be unstable if greater than 40% of the articular surface is involved. Dorsal base fractures result from hyperflexion injury and represents an avulsion of the central tendon. And finally, lateral base fractures represent an avulsion of collateral ligaments. Complete articular fractures are also known as pilon fractures, like in the ankle, and these fracture patterns are unstable in all directions. Non-operative management for middle phalanx fractures, like in proximal phalanx fractures, includes buddy taping versus splinting, which are indicated for extra-articular fractures with less than 10 degrees angulation or less than 2 millimeters of shortening and no rotational deformity, as well as for non-displaced intra-articular fractures. The non-operative protocol is the same as for proximal phalanx fractures, involving 3 weeks of immobilization followed by aggressive range of motion. Operative options for middle phalanx fractures include CRPP versus ORIF, as in the proximal phalanx, which are indicated for extra-articular fractures with greater than 10 degrees of angulation or greater than 2 millimeters of shortening or rotational deformity. Other operative indications include displaced intra-articular fractures as well as irreducible or unstable fracture patterns. Operative techniques include crossed K-wires, extension block pinning, collateral recess pinning, mini-fragment fixation with plate and or lag screws, or a volar plate arthroplasty. Finally, distal phalanx fractures are the most common phalanx fracture, and they can be classified as tough fractures, shaft fractures, base fractures, and Seymour fractures. Tuft fractures usually result from a crush injury. These are usually stable due to the nail plate dorsally and pulp volarly. They are often associated with laceration of the nail matrix or pulp. Shaft fractures can be either transverse or longitudinal. Base fractures are usually unstable. The mechanism can be shearing due to axial load, leading to fractures involving greater than 20% of the articular surface, or avulsion due to tensile forces of the terminal tendon, or FDP, leading to a small avulsion fracture. Base fractures can be further classified into volar base and dorsal base fractures. Seymour fractures are epiphyseal injuries of the distal phalanx that result from a hyperflexion mechanism, and they present as a mallet deformity, otherwise known as an apex dorsal angulation, that causes a flexed posturing of the distal phalanx. The deformity results from an imbalance between the flexor and the extensor tendons at the level of the fracture. The extensor tendon inserts into the epiphysis of the distal phalanx, while the flexor tendon inserts into the metaphysis of the distal phalanx, and a widened physis is likely to have interposed tissue in the fracture site. It's important to realize that Seymour fractures are not typical mallet finger injuries, as they are technically open fractures with nail bed injuries, and so therefore should not just be splinted. Operative intervention is usually warranted to ensure that there is no interposed tissue in the fracture site, and failure to recognize this may actually result in nail plate deformity, chronic osteomyelitis, or physeal arrest in children. Injury to the middle finger is the most common in Seymour fractures, and the mechanism is usually related to direct trauma or a crush injury, like the finger being caught in a door or a heavy object being dropped on the finger. Non-operative management of distal phalanx fractures includes close reduction, plus or minus splinting, which is indicated in most cases. It's important to realize that the nail matrix may be incarcerated in the fracture and subsequently blocks the reduction. Operative intervention for distal phalanx fractures usually involves removing the nail, repairing the nail bed, and replacing the nail to maintain the epiphyseal fold. And this is of course indicated for distal phalanx fractures with nail bed injuries. CRPP versus ORIF is indicated for displaced or irreducible shaft fractures, dorsal base fractures with greater than 25% articular involvement, displaced volar base fractures with a large fragment and involvement of the FDP, as well as non-unions. Techniques may include longitudinal or crossed K-wires, extension block pinning, or mini-fragment fixation with lag screws. Complications from phalanx fractures include loss of motion, malunion, and non-union. Loss of motion is the most common complication, and predisposing factors include prolonged immobilization, associated joint injury, and extensive surgical dissection. Usually this complication is treated with rehab or surgical release as a last resort. Malunion can occur in fractures with severe malrotation, angulation, and/or shortening. Surgery for malunion is indicated when associated with functional impairment. A corrective osteotomy at the malunion site is the preferred treatment, as a metacarpal osteotomy will have a limited degree of correction. Non-unions are uncommon. Most of them are atrophic and associated with bone loss or neurovascular compromise. Surgical options include resection, bone grafting, plating, ray amputation, or fusion. That's all for this review on phalanx fractures. Hopefully that was helpful. Look out for questions related to this topic on this weekend's question session, and hopefully this episode will have prepared you for that review. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.